This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast brought to you by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. In our first part of our draft series, we're going to be going position by position between now and April for the NFL draft. We have Brad Kelly of the Draft Network on, the wide receiver guru, to talk wide receivers with us, which is obviously a big position of need for the Patriots this offseason with so many guys on the flux. What's up, Brad?
Nothing much. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for coming on. And Adam, obviously, we did this last year, so basically we're going to just lay it out for you guys again this year. We're going to start at the top with some of the guys that are projected to go in the first round or in the second round, and then we'll get into some of the guys that are going to go later in the draft, and we'll certainly touch on some of the Patriots guys that everybody's going to be mocking to the Pats, like Hunter Renfrow and Andy Isabella and all those guys later on in the draft. But the first question we wanted to ask you, Brad, was the Patriots are on the clock at 32, draft night, first round. Who are you taking out of the wide receivers? Let's say, you know, just take into account who might already be off the board, though.
Well, assuming DK Metcalf from Ole Miss is gone, which I think he will be a top 15 pick, I would look at Kelvin Harmon from NC State. 6'3", 214 pounds, really consistent route runner. And there's a difference between being an elite separator, which he's not, but being someone who creates constant throwing windows. And that's what he does. He has plus athleticism, great hands. He has a my ball attitude. He reminds me a lot of Miles Austin, the former Cowboys receiver. And I think you feel comfortable with him as a wide receiver one in an NFL offense. And that's who I would look for.
Yeah, it seems like the times that you watch NC State this year, he's been a sort of guy who's consistently been able to get open. He's worked with a pretty accurate quarterback in Finley, in an offense that's pretty balanced and pretty good. So I think he'd be a good pick for that spot. It's so early in the process. You don't know, you know, who's going to go where and who's going to be available. A bunch of, people start hopping on his bandwagon if he's gone by then, or, you know, and it's a guy like Riley Ridley who's there instead. But, I certainly think he'd be a logical pick if the Patriots do want to go for wide receiver at that spot.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up Riley Ridley with you, Brad, because I think that he's a Georgia Bulldog, so that's obviously going to attract some attention with the way the draft went last year for the Patriots with Wynn and Michelle. But B, I also just think that he's one of those guys that they might really like from an athletic standpoint. He kind of has the build and the size and the speed and the, especially the game at the top of the route that they're really going to like with the route breaks. But it seems like there's a lot of kind of volatility to his scouting report. Some people think that he's a first round pick. Some people aren't as high on him. I'm curious where you're at.
I like Riley Ridley. I think he ends up in five, likely a high day two grade. There's the Georgia connection, and that's a staff that Bill Belichick has a lot of trust in. Shown he's had a lot of trust in them. So if they say, you know, this is a guy, then this is our guy that could be your top, then I think Belichick's going to trust them. Like you said, there's a lot of volatility to his reports because he wasn't the most productive wide receiver. And part of that, in my opinion, was because they're more of a running-based offense. And when they're throwing the ball, they have a lot of other receiving options. You look at Mecole Hardman and Terry Godwin II and Isaac Nauta and even the running back. So I think it was kind of more of a product of his surroundings as to why he wasn't as productive. But traits-wise, I think you see it. You see the explosiveness. You see the body control and the route running, coupled in the fact that he is 6'2" and he is a little bit longer. So I think he's a guy who I think projects more as a secondary, but a really high-end secondary option in the NFL.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think one of the things I like about when I watch Ridley is he's got some sort of subtle movements when he's coming in and out of his breaks. And, he's been able to get over one of the films that I like to watch from him is the LSU one where he's going up against Greedy Williams a lot of the times. And obviously he didn't win every battle, but there are times where he did get open there. He would draw pass interference. He got behind him one time, and Williams knocked the ball away at the last second in the end zone. And he also got free, I think, either for a long gain or a touchdown. And so he's just a guy that I think you can put him on the outside and and be confident that he's going to sort of, you know, make a lot of different types of plays. I think he's sort of got a nice versatility to him.
Yeah, I think the one thing that sticks out for me too from a pass perspective is one thing that they've kind of hammered home over the last couple of years especially is that they like guys that have shown that they can play well in big games, right? They go up against big competition or go in the CFB playoff or something like that and you play well against high competition and they know that they're going to be in these big games, you know, the conference championship games and the Super Bowl. So guys that aren't afraid of those moments, and he's just been really good in those moments, especially in the 2017 college football playoff where he was probably better than his brother in that game and for a lot of it. And it was, you know, another kind of pedigree type pick where he has a football family. He's a guy that went to a big Power Five school. It just kind of seems like in the first round, they're kind of leaning towards that a little bit more to kind of make sure that they're picking a guy that isn't someone from a smaller school. And obviously, like you guys both said, you know, the skill and the talent is all there for him too. Want to move on to two other guys here. And Brad, I asked you about this a couple of days ago because a lot of people are very, very high on A.J. Brown. And he kind of fits the Patriots mold in the slot. And two guys that I kind of see going head-to-head a lot in this draft process are him and Deebo Samuel. And I'm just a lot higher on Deebo Samuel than I am on A.J. Brown. But I know a lot of people do love Brown too.
So it's interesting that you bring up those two guys as a comparison to each other because – every single time one of them gets tweeted about, someone throws out the same, like, three cops form, which is, like, you know, Anquan Boldin and DJ Moon. Those are the three people that everyone always says. And first of all, I don't see that for either of those two guys. I think those are kind of lazy. But I prefer Deebo Samuel to A.J. Brown. I think Brown is going to be a nice player, a guy who is pretty crisp and refined. He has good route-running technique. But like you said, mostly played in the slot. I thought at the end of the season, their last two or three games, he played on the outside more. And I thought his traits translate better on the outside. But there are a lot of inefficiencies he has out there that I think is going to take him maybe a year or two to get more comfortable if a team does want him to play out there. Whereas Deebo Samuel played out there a ton, played in the slot a lot, went in motion a lot. He was a return man. He played on the punt team. He played on the punt return team. And that's not as a punt returner. He was as a guy who rushed the kick. A kick returner, punt returner. He can do it all. He can do it all with the ball in his hands. As a junior, he had 6 touchdowns on 19 touches before he got injured, which is just shows how incredible and explosive he is as a ball carrier. And that translates into his route running. So I think he's a complete player. And I think if Kelvin Harmon is gone and we are looking at a receiver at 32, he could be an option at that spot.
Yeah, I the thing I like about Brown is sort of, you know, I think he needs to clean up some of his like techniques and fundamentals and route running and all that stuff. But I like how, you know, you get a guy that big after the catch and you know has a head of steam going up against defensive backs after he catches the ball. And I think he's really good with contested catches too, but I agree. He's not like the most polished guy. I think it like, there is a little bit of, you know, sort of upside with him where you have to, you know, he's in terms of route running and all that stuff, he's not even, you know, one of the better guys I saw on that team. So, you know, Evan and I were texting about that a little bit too, in comparison to, you know, like DeMarcus Lodge. But yeah, with Samuel, I mean, I saw, you know, a little bit of that with his playmaking ability and also like, you know, even at the Senior Bowl, like, it's sometimes hard to find guys who are competitive in practices and stuff like that at the same level that they are in games. And I kind of feel like the consistency from Samuel in practices and in with his film was pretty encouraging. So, you know, I don't think he's like always necessarily going to jump off of you. He doesn't look like the typical receiver, so sort of like bulky and all that. But I, you know, I think, you know, from a production standpoint and from, you know, an effort standpoint, he checks a lot of good boxes there.
Yeah, I think with Brown, and I've gotten some flack about this one, like not being as high on him as some other people. And I think the biggest thing is just that when I watch him, I kind of see him playing at one speed a lot, and I don't see a lot of that shiftiness or that change of direction that you see with Samuel. And with Samuel, I think the biggest clip that's been out there is that whip route that he ran at the Senior Bowl, and it went around Patriots Twitter, and everybody was like, oh, that guy looks exactly like, you know, an Edelman or an Amendola or something like that. And I just think that with him, the change of direction skill is a little bit more there, where with A.J. Brown, it's kind of just like you see him running a lot of the slot routes that are either on a vertical plane or a horizontal plane, but it's more like an over route or a drag or something like that, and it's not as much shiftiness as much option routes. I think Deebo Samuel could step in to like an option route role in the slot and do it well right away. Right. The other thing is that after the catch, you know, Brad, you were talking about this, Deebo is a monster after the catch. Just a guy that is always kind of getting into yak mode right away, and he's almost like built like a running back in a lot of ways when he has the ball in his hands. I don't dislike AJ Brown. I guess I just think that, you know, a lot of the buzz about him, and I think a lot of it also kind of stemmed from what people thought about him before we even started this past college football season. I know he had a lot of high upside type you know, comparisons, and a lot of people liked him the most out of all of those Ole Miss wide receivers going into the year. But I just don't know if – I just would prefer Deebo Samuel's ability to kind of change direction and run after the catch. Another guy in this kind of category, I would say a little bit, is N'Keal Harry, who is an interesting prospect. And, Brad, my biggest question with him was just his usage, obviously – kind of holds back the projection, right? It's kind of difficult to see what exactly he's going to be because he wasn't exactly used to the best of his abilities.
So a few things to touch on what you said. It's funny that you mentioned Deebo Samuel's whip route at the Senior Bowl, because I was about 8 feet away. I was about 8 feet away when it happened, and it was awesome. And I was like looking around and getting excited, seeing if my friends are with me, that I could like yell at them about it, but no one was. But about N'Keal Harry, I actually wrote an article during midseason. He went like a month in season where he was only averaging like 7 or 8 yards per catch. And it's because of that usage that, like you mentioned. And towards the end of the season, I think Arizona State kind of realized it and started to push the ball with him more down the field. And that's where he's going to thrive. He's going to be more of a contested guy. He operates well with a guy on his hip, but that's kind of an issue in and of itself, because is he a separator at the next level? And I don't necessarily see it. He's a guy who can win those tough grabs, but I want to see him win like a consistent basis with his route running, and I don't see that. And for a guy who has plus athleticism, you don't see it in his route running. But with that said, he does do it with the ball in his hands after the catch.
Yeah.
Definitely a guy who can break a lot of tackles. I mean, you don't see guys his size, you know, move with the ball in his hands quite like him. And that's why he was even a punt returner, which is kind of crazy for his size as well. So I think early on, he's at least a guy you can incorporate in the screen game. You know, he can win some tough contested catches, but I think his ceiling is a little capped because of his lack of route running athleticism.
Yeah, that was an interesting point you made, because you watch the film and you see him, and he's just, you know, he's making these contested catches and everything, but then he gets a step once he gets the ball. And you literally see him cross the other side of the field and get to the end zone. And it's, you know, I've seen it a couple times where he would catch the ball on one side of the field and like step back and pick up blockers and go to the other side of the field, which you really don't see very often at the Division I level, even against some of the competition he was going against. One of them was against UTEP or something like that. But yeah, he's like he's somebody that, you know, if once you get the ball in his hands, he can be very dangerous. And you know, I don't know, you know, why he was used that way, because he's a big guy. But you know, I agree. Like as far as, you know, being like somebody who can take the top off with his speed or something like that, I don't really necessarily see that aspect in his game or physically. I think he's a good player with, you know, with good yards after catch ability, but after that, like I don't necessarily see him as being somebody who can be like a deep threat.
Yeah, that was my biggest worry with him, was just, is he almost like a glorified gadget player where you're using him on screens and quick hitters and stuff like that to get his yak ability and allow him to play in space, because he's not going to be able to just create separation on his own on a downfield route or something like that on a consistent basis. And if that's the type of player that he is, then I think he can be productive in that role. But how are you going to expand that, and kind of what ceiling does he have, as you mentioned, Brad, with that, just that type of skill set? You know, obviously the contested catch thing, I think, is something that's surprising, just given the other things that people say about him. You know, is really a lot of stuff, you know, after the catch and now that kind of stuff. And then you also throw in there that he can go up and win jump balls. So maybe that is something that's kind of unique about him and a skill that he can go for, you know, moving forward to kind of expand that ceiling. But I just, when I watch him play, I kind of just see him as kind of like a gadget type player that is, you know, built really well to take on hits and to beat, you know, create yards after the catch and do that kind of stuff, but maybe not necessarily as a downfield receiver. Do you think that he is a gadget type player in the NFL, or do you think that that's just the role he was used in and he can play in a more expanded role?
I don't necessarily want to use the term gadget, because when I hear gadget, I think like Tavon Austin just says nothing.
That's fair. True.
But as far as that goes, I don't disagree with your assessment at all. I think, you know, especially early on in his career, I think that's what his role is going to be. And that's a lot of space, you know, screen game, that type of thing. And then you get into the red zone, and if you get him in a one-on-one matchup, you're going to throw the ball up to him. So he's a guy who I think early on could end up with 6 to 8 touchdowns as a rookie and have a lot of yards after the catch, but not a guy who's going to fit into the intermediate game a lot. Not a guy who's going to fit in the slot much either. So as far as a Patriots projection goes, I don't really think he fits what we look for in our receiver. And I think the development, the ceiling is there from the development of that, but I think early in his career, it's not going to be there.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, then maybe the gadget player, the Tavon Austin kind of thing would definitely come out for some people. And that's definitely not the type of guy that he is. But all right, now we got to get down to the two guys that maybe matter the most out of anybody in the entire draft of the Patriots. You know where I'm going with this. Hunter Renfrow and Andy Isabella. Obviously, I mean, the white wide receiver thing is what it is. We can put that in its own place. But from a talent standpoint and what they present to you, my first question to you, Brad, is, are they graded higher right now for you than, let's say, like Braxton Berrios or Austin Carr was over the last couple of years?
100% they are. I was really low on Berrios, but that's kind of beside the point. I think guys like Renfrow and Isabella, specifically Renfrow, he has such a high ceiling, and he has such a high floor. He has like the lowest bust rate like of any receiver that I've ever scouted. I know exactly what Hunter Renfrow is going to be at the next level. I think he's going to be a very good fourth option, maybe third receiver, fourth option in a passing offense, and a guy who's going to be consistent. I don't mean to just throw out these, like, you know, broad white wide receiver terms, but it's a guy who's going to be reliable, you know, good hands. He's a good route runner, really good change of direction, more than his speed is. His short area quickness is better, but a guy who's just going to make the tough plays. He's going to move the chains for you. And that's something that the Patriots obviously value. And that's something that, you know, could get him drafted in the third or fourth round to New England. I think Isabella is different. He's more of a downfield guy. He definitely has more long speed. I mean, we all know the story of him beating Denzel Ward in the 100 meter in Ohio when they were seniors in high school. So he has that juice to get downfield. He has a lot of success up the seam, a little bit of a body catcher. And that's going to come back to bite him some in the NFL if he tries to win downfield like that. And his routes aren't actually that refined as far as his footwork goes, but he is so quick that it almost doesn't matter a lot of the times. So he's good on those horizontal routes and those in-breaking routes as well. So I think Isabella has the higher ceiling. I think Renfrow has the higher floor, and Isabella has a little bit higher chance to bust. But I think both would be good functional NFL players and likely a third wide receiver on whatever team drafts him.
What did you think of Isabella at the Senior Bowl? I know you were down there for practices and for the game, because I know there were some people, Ted Wynn, I think, was one of them, that wasn't like completely wowed by his Senior Bowl practices in particular.
I wasn't exactly wowed by him. I mean, I think he, to be honest, as crazy as it was, a guy like Penny Hart playing the same position almost overshadowed him. Maybe that had to do with expectations coming into the week, but I thought Isabella showed some deficiencies in his, like I said, in his technique. This is a guy who, when he breaks on that 90 degree cut, he's actually losing ground a lot of times because his legs are kind of so stubby and short. and they're still quick, but they're not as quick as a guy like Penny Hartz was, because Penny Hartz had the proper technique when he was doing them. So it's kind of like Isabella needs to clean that up, and then he's going down the field and he's still kind of letting the ball come into his body. And that might work against the Senior Bowl cornerbacks who were very underwhelming. But when you get out there against a guy like Richard Sherman, or even a guy in the Patriots like Stephon Gilmore, that's not going to fly. So I think he has some things to work on, but he has so much to work with that like 4.3 high 4.3 speed is what I think he's going to run, and the fact that he's kind of more versatile than your typical 5.9 wide receiver is. So I think I wasn't very wild, but definitely a guy with a ceiling because of that athleticism.
Yeah, I saw a lot of Isabella this year, you know, just covering games and stuff, and just one thing I've noticed is he always finds a way to impact the game somehow. Like especially on these jet sweeps and end arounds and stuff, it was always good for, you know, 7, 10, 20 yards. And he, you know, really has, I mean, his speed really does stick out. I mean, he just has a great sort of natural ability at tracking the ball in the air on these deep balls. I feel like, you know, one of the things that he, you know, holds him back, like with his technique, it seems like he's machine gunning his feet a little too much on some of these cuts, which is fine, but, you know, which can be sort of coached out of him. But I think, you know, one of the things I've, you know, noticed about him is that, you know, the teams that have been, you know, trying to take him away as the, you know, the first option, you know, still weren't able to do it. And, you know, the way that UMass ran their offense, he didn't just, you know, line up in one place or the other. He moved around a lot. And he sort of showed the whole sort of package with them. So I, you know – you know, I don't know exactly how great he'll be in the NFL. I just know that, like, you know, he's got such great tools to work with. And I never really saw a team, even that Georgia game, you know, going against guys like that, where they had a hard time taking him away too. So, you know, with his physical skills, it's just, you know, it's hard to hold him down for an entire game. I there was not a single game where I was, you know, watching where, you know, he was able to be taken away fully. And, he's just such a fast guy when you see him in person. He really blew me away.
Yeah, I think that, you know, both of you kind of hit it there on the head with Isabella. It's like he's such a great athlete, and it's really surprising that when you have this 5'9 guy that he can take the top off the defense so easily, but at the top of the route it's not as clean or as crisp as you would like to see in some of the horizontal breaking stuff that he will have to run in, let's say, an offense like the Patriots. But at the same time, a lot of the stuff that they've been doing with Edelman, especially this past season, is a lot of that kind of, you know, the crossing routes and the corner routes and stuff like that from a slot alignment, especially the stuff off of play action where he's coming over the middle a little bit deeper down the field than, let's say, like a quick little option route or something like that would be. And I think that that is where Isabella could potentially separate himself from Renfro, just specifically in a role that the Patriots might use him in. Whereas Renfro, I just love him because, like you said, Brad, his floor is so high that he's going to be able to kind of just fit in right away and play a pretty good role. And he's got such a great feel for the game, and he's good at the top of the route, obviously, against man coverage, which helps him separate. And then against zone, he just has a great feel of kind of finding the soft spots and sitting down in those zones. And we know how that kind of really matters a lot when you play with Tom Brady, because Tom Brady is going to see the zone so quickly that you need a player that's going to find those soft spots with him. And it seems like Renfro has that great awareness. And then he also has good awareness after the catch to, you know, not take on big hits and, you know, create a little bit more after the catch as well. So I'm kind of torn between these two, because Isabella, I think, is definitely the player that has the higher ceiling and has more potential. But I think that Renfro is the type of guy that the Patriots might like just because of his consistency and reliability. And as you mentioned, I mean, the guy catches everything.
Oh, yeah. the ball never hits the ground when it's when it goes his way. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it really is. All right. Moving on now. This is a name that I didn't mention to you, Brad, on our little list that I sent you beforehand, but I know you just wrote on him, so I wanted to just touch on him really quick with you. That is Stanley Morgan Jr., who is not Stanley Morgan's son. Okay, so let's not confuse that with anybody. This is not Patriots great Stanley Morgan's son. This is a completely different Stanley Morgan, but he's pretty good at football too. Maybe not that good, but pretty good.
Yeah, so I read online that he was Stanley Morgan from the Patriots.
It's all over the place.
I put it into a video, and he's like, "Yeah, dude, that's not my dad."
Yeah.
So I was like, "Oh, yeah, sorry."
That's kind of funny.
I'm a big fan of Stanley Morgan.
You know, if he gets drafted by the Patriots, that everybody's going to think it's he's just.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I've been a big fan of Stanley Morgan Jr. since the summer. Really a guy who I think nuance-wise and potential-wise and his route running technique is probably the best in the class. It's safe for me to say that by now that I've watched enough players that I feel comfortable saying that. And it's been like that even the year before when he was a junior playing a different offense at Nebraska. So a guy who just is going to get open. He's a consistent pass catcher. He had more drops 2017, 2018, so he has gotten a little bit better as far as his possession traits go. And I think he is a guy who's going to be open in the league in 2025. We're going to be hearing about how Stanley Morgan Jr. is still getting open. So I think he's a long-term fit. Another guy who's probably more of a complimentary player because he's not an elite athlete. But a guy who I think is going to fit in well and just get open in the league for the next 10 years.
Yeah, he does seem to know how to just kind of use a little bit of tricks, whether it's those shoulder or head fakes or varying his stride length or build up speed and all those types of things that can kind of, challenges cornerbacks and man coverage specifically. And the other thing, we don't talk a ton about like these types of wow things, but that stiff arm that he throws after the catch is wild. Like he will just throw stiff arms at people and they just have no chance of tackling the guy after the catch. He's not necessarily going to run away from a ton of people. He's not like just an elite athlete or anything like that, but he is able to throw that stiff arm and he kind of is, it takes you by surprise because you don't see this kind of dynamic guy in the open field, but he has that great stiff arm. I really liked his tape too. I thought that he was a really good route runner, a guy that could really fit into pretty much any offense in any role, and really kind of excel. And especially when he gets a free release at the line of scrimmage, he's really good in that role too. So a guy that maybe could be on the Patriots radar, I don't know, somewhere in the early day three conversation, I would say.
I think that's a fair spot that we could target him. The thing is, he has gotten into a little bit of trouble at Nebraska, and he was I was told that he was supposed to be at the East West Shrine Game, and they were expecting him to be there, and he just didn't show up and didn't tell him why. So I think the NFL is going to actually value him a little bit less, just because there are some off the field concerns. Even if he's not necessarily like a bad kid or got bad grades, and the Nebraska coaching staff might vouch for him, but I think the NFL is going to look at those off the field things and might be a little concerned. Now, that's a guy who might have a grade in the top 100 who actually ends up slipping to the sixth or seventh round. So I think that makes him even more enticing because the Patriots love those type of guys. Let me look thinking back to another Nebraska guy in Alfonso Dennard, who got arrested a week before the draft, was supposed to be a first rounder, fell to them in the seventh, and they were like, "Yeah, we'll scoop him up," and he became a productive player for us for like 4 years. So that's a guy who I think the Patriots are really, really going to look after because I think he's going to go lower than people anticipate.
Adam, you have another name you want to throw at Brad, or what?
One name that we've talked about, but I don't know if you have with Brad yet, but is Hakeem Butler out of Iowa State, because he seems like such a boom bust type of like from one play to the next. Like, I mean, I don't doubt his effort. Like he's such a good blocker. He swallows guys up when the play's away from him. So he's like there, and there's drops. But then again, you'll see these great plays where he makes this unbelievable catch between two guys and throws them both off him and just sort of rumbles 30 yards for a touchdown. What do you see out of him? I mean, it seems to me that he's definitely he's definitely an outside receiver, but you know, where do you see his potential in the NFL?
So I coach the wide receivers actually at a Division III school in Rhode Island, and what we refer to Hakeem Butler as is Big Boy Yak, meaning he's going to go up and get the ball, and he's going to throw dudes around after the catch. And I love that. Now, that's not necessarily something that wide receivers generally are going to be proficient at, because most receivers are looking to be elusive and avoid defenders. Hakeem Butler's looking to get his hands on you and throw you around, which is not typical. But it's something that when you see, it's just like, yeah, this guy can play. Because he can, like you said, he can go up and win, and then he can stay upright and then rip off long touchdowns that way. So in a sense, he's kind of like a combination of everything that Nikhil Harry does well, but in a bigger body, but he's even a little bit less refined. So I think he's a guy who's going to need to develop, but at the very least, if I need a red zone target and a red zone target on the Patriots retires this year, then Hakeem Butler could be a good option as a guy who can just throw it up to.
Yeah, who could that be? Hakeem Butler is one of those guys that I like have a really tough problem evaluating him, because I'm more one of those guys that loves to see guys that are great route runners that are going to separate the top of the route and do that kind of thing. And that's not him at all. But at the same time, when I watch him, I just love watching the guy play because he's just a beast. So it's like, you know, which it's kind of a stylistic thing, right, of which one you prefer. And it kind of goes against everything that I believe in to have like a super high grade on him, because he doesn't separate necessarily like some of the other guys that we've talked about tonight. But at the same time, I mean, his ability to go up and get catches, and that one-handed catch that he had in the bowl game, and the yak ability, obviously, after the catch, and the way that he just was like kind of like a man amongst boys sometimes this season. Yeah. It's just hard to kind of ignore those types of things. So he's probably going to be outside of my top 10 just because he's not really my cup of tea. But like you said, Brad, if they are looking for a red zone target that can kind of box guys out and win jump balls and stuff like that, they could do a whole lot worse than Hakeem Butler. And maybe the NFL doesn't, you know, sees the kind of skills that he has, though. And that this is kind of what I'm worried about, is that a lot of those NFL guys, you know, they prioritize some of those, you know, high level talents or high level traits, and they say this guy's higher than we might think. Kind of like a guy like a Cortland Sutton, for example, who just couldn't run a route, but you threw it up to him and he would catch it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was kind of where I'm at with Butler. So I wonder if he almost goes too high in the draft, I guess is my question.
I think that's I honestly think that's going to happen, but the thing that might actually end up pushing him down in the end, say, you know, after the combine, if he's only tests as not as high as people expect him to test like at, you know, through the roof. I don't think that's actually going to end up happening. So they could get lukewarm on him. But the thing that might push him down is the fact that there are a lot of good big receivers in this class. Like you look at DK Metcalf and Kelvin Harmon, and there's JJ Arcega-Whiteside and Antoine Wesley, and so many other guys who have that same height length. That it's like, oh, maybe who is the guy that's going to fall out of that group, and then if the Patriots are there, they might be able to scoop that one person who falls, they might be able to scoop them up.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, that's a good transition. I wanted to ask you to close it out here. A sleeper guy that we haven't talked about yet that you kind of see and screams Patriots to you.
Terry McLaurin.
I knew you were going to go there. I love it.
Easiest question I've had to answer all night. This guy screams the New England Patriots. Obviously, Bill Belichick has a strong relationship with Urban Meyer, who is Terry McLaurin's coach at Ohio State. Obviously, has a strong relationship with Greg Schiano, who is the new defensive coordinator, who just coached at Ohio State. So not that he was coaching McLaurin directly, but he was coaching a team that, you know, had McLaurin on it. And he's a guy who is a versatile player on the offense, play a lot on the outside, play a lot on the inside. Only had 30-something receptions and 700 yards, but had 11 touchdowns. So an explosive player and an explosive athlete. They have him as the second-fastest shuttle and second-fastest 40 on Ohio State's team, and that's a team that has some pretty stud athletes on it. Yeah. And then you look at his ability on special teams. He has plays as a punt gunner and even on the rest of special teams, but specifically as a punt gunner, that are Matthew Slater-esque, and Slater's not going to play forever. So not saying that he's just a special teams guy, because he's not, but is a guy who could fill in that special teams role. And obviously the Patriots value that a ton. So he's the guy who just screams during the Patriots from his college coach to his on-field role on the offense and his on-field role on special teams. And he's a guy who I think Bill Belichick is going to fall in love with.
Yeah, I like McLaurin too a little bit because that offense that they had was it was so crossing route heavy. I mean, I think that, you know, sort of everybody's touched on that with Ohio State, but it's true. And yeah, you know, I think, you know, McLaurin has some gaminess, some sense to him as far as, you know, where to find a spot in the zone when teams play him that way, and find open space and sit there and get to the ball. And Haskins was such a guy that that everybody's going to be looking at so much this draft season, that I think a lot of people are going to be having eyes on him, and guys look like Paris Campbell and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to see who values McLaurin, and you make such a great point about him as a gunner. Like, you know, that's such a plus with the Pats, you know, to have guys like that who can be a factor on multiple facets of the game. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good sleeper pick there.
Can we just pencil McLaurin in the second round? Because a guy that's a four-down player that's going to play on special teams and contribute big time, and then also does some of the things that he does as a receiver that I think the Patriots will like. I mean, you put him on my radar, Brad, and he, like, just screams Patriots to everybody, I think. And one thing that really impressed me, though, was at the line of scrimmage, his footwork and his route releases, violent hands to kind of beat press coverage with his hands and do that kind of thing. A lot of people, when they, you know, have watched that Ohio State offense, talk a lot about Paris Campbell, who obviously is on a completely different level as McLaurin. I think that McLaurin's a much better player, much better prospect. But a lot of people watch Paris Campbell and they see how explosive he is and how, you know, fast he is. He's going to run, you know, probably like a 4.3 or something like that at the combine. And it kind of overshadows McLaurin a little bit because he's not quite that athlete. But McLaurin is a really good athlete in himself. I think he's going to probably test pretty well at the combine too. So he seems like a perfect fit for the Patriots, and I almost wonder if they go with a guy like McLaurin this time around instead of like a Renfro or an Isabella and kind of surprise us all. I wouldn't be shocked at that. The last name I wanted to throw at you was kind of my sleeper guy, who is now not becoming a sleeper guy because I think everybody's kind of aware of Antoine Wesley at this point, or should be aware of him. But I know he doesn't necessarily fit the mold of the Patriots receiver, but you watch the guy's ability at 6'5" to change directions and sink his hips and has that hip flexibility. It's pretty incredible to watch. I mean, I don't really want to compare him to anybody, but he's just a really unique athlete. I know he's a little bit lanky and could probably add some to his frame, but I know that you were tweeting about him a little bit, Brad.
Yeah, so to touch on a few of the things that you mentioned, especially the thing about McLaurin at the line of scrimmage, actually at the Senior Bowl, it was day two of the practices, which media wasn't allowed to be at because it was a rainstorm and they had to have it inside. But we sort of would
Was that Belichick making it rain? Because it might have been.
We were still able to access the and their special teams drills, and McLaurin's the gunner, and there's two guys, you know, on the gunner, because that's typically what you see in the NFL. And one of them's a corner, and one of them is Alex Wesley, the receiver from Northern Colorado, and McLaurin just runs right by him. And it was like, whoa, like, did not get touched, punt gunner, two guys, didn't get a single finger on him. It was like, this dude kid, that translates into route running and your releases against a corner. And now, granted, one of those guys was a receiver, but there's two guys, and none of them could touch him. It's like, this dude can run the line of scrimmage. But to touch on Juan Wesley from Texas Tech, the second game of the season for them, I think it was second game, was against Houston, and he had 260 receiving yards or something crazy like that.
Yeah,
and set the Texas Tech record, single game record for receiving yards, which is incredible considering the talent that they've had come at receiver, like Michael Crabtree and Amendola and all those guys, and the fact that they've been in the passing offense for years. He sets a single game record, and it was only like his second career start. He only had 10 coming into the season in his career. And I wrote an article that Monday morning saying Antoine Wesley's going to come out in this class and he's going to be a hidden gem. And I was kind of just saying it just because, oh, that was an impressive game. I just want to capitalize on the fact that he just had such a good game. And then it turns out that he's the second leading receiver in the country at the end of the season. I was like, nailed it. I didn't actually think it was going to be like that much of a climb for him, but it ended up being one. And just looking at that game against Houston and how he progresses the year went on, I think you made a lot of good points. He's a guy who at 6'5", 6'6", can really sink his hips well and change direction. And you see it in his comeback routes, and you see it near the goal line in the red zone. And also a guy who not necessarily is always high pointing the ball, but those flashes of those high points are incredible. And you think this guy puts it all together, adds say 5-10 pounds of muscle to his frame, and has just all the tools you could possibly want, to the point where it's like, this guy has potential to be a top 15, top 20 receiver in the NFL if everything goes right for him. And he's not even being projected in the first round. So there's a guy who's a really high upside pick. And if the Patriots do select him or have him on their radar, I think it's a guy who's going to be really exciting, maybe a 2 or 3 years down the line.
Yeah, he's got great tracking skills too, to track the deep ball and kind of always looking it into his hands. Maybe his hands aren't necessarily the best quite yet, something that he might need to work on a little bit. But just watching a guy that tall be able to change directions like that is pretty rare. But we could go on all night about these wide receiver prospects. I know that I'm sure that people are going to be in the comments about which ones we missed and which guys we're sitting on and stuff like that. Just par for the course. But Brad, thank you so much for coming on. Do you want to tease anything or just tell people in general they can read you and follow you?
Yeah, the Twitter page is at BradKelly17. Kelly is K-E-L-L-Y, not E-Y. Right for the Draft Network, which you can follow at Draft Network LLC and the draft network.com. We are launching two user-friendly programs, Build Your Own Big Board and the Mock Draft Machine. So the Mock Draft Machine is kind of the biggest draw. You can do a 7-round mock draft for one team or all the way up to 32 teams. So if you want, you can sit down and do a full 7-round 32-team mock draft. I would never do that, but if you want to, you can. Both of those launch February 25th, right at midnight, so 12:01. I'll be up there, you know, building my own big board. And in that program, we'll have all the scouting reports from our analysts embedded, so you can read the scouting reports and has position fits and round grades and all that type of stuff. And you can build your own board, and then you can put that into the mock draft machine, and you can sim a whole draft or do a one team 7-round mock draft or 7-round mock draft, 32 teams, whatever you want. So those both launched the 25th. I think they're going to be big hits. They look really good. They're really user friendly. So keep your eye out for that and follow at BradKelly17 and at Draft Network LLC.
That sounds great. The Draft Network, I have to say, is an invaluable resource, even for me. You guys are doing a great job pumping out all those profiles. I know it's not easy. I think you guys have done like over like 300 guys at this point or something like that, which is just incredible. And it's really great to kind of get a good broad stroke of these guys. But even you guys go into a lot of detail in those too. And one of the features I like the most about the profiles is the ones that give you the best and the worst tape from a guy. That's going to be really helpful if you kind of want to get into scouting these guys along with us a little bit, to see a guy's, you know, best tape and then also go and watch in consecutive order his worst tape, to kind of see, you know, not all of these guys, you go turn on like a highlight reel, then all these guys are going to look like first round picks. So it's nice to kind of see that, you know, plethora of, you know, a long scale of which way he's going to go, kind of meet in the middle, I guess is what I'm trying to say for a lot of these prospects. But Brad, thanks once again. We're definitely going to have you on again soon. If the Patriots draft one of these guys or a receiver in general, we know where to come. And Adam and I will be back next week. We're going to talk about some more pass catchers, I think, next week, Adam, and I talk about some of the tight ends that I'm sure we could have asked Brad about too, but we didn't want to keep him around for 2 hours. So
yeah.
We're going to let him go. And tight ends, obviously another big position of need. You know, Hoxton, Noah Font, Irv Smith. We're going to be talking about all of those guys, I am sure. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazard. Thanks once again to Brad Kelly, and thanks for listening.